Chapter 6 Continued. Harry tried his best not to think about the hearing while they emptied the glass-fronted cabinets that afternoon. Fortunately for him, it was a job that required a lot of concentration, as many of the objects in there seemed very reluctant to leave their dusty shelves. Sirius sustained a bad bite from a silver snuff-box. Within seconds, his bitten hand had developed an unpleasant, crusty covering, like a tough brown glove. "It's okay," he said, examining the hand with interest, before tapping it lightly with his wand and restoring its skin to normal. "Must be wart-cap powder in there." He threw the box aside into the sack where they were depositing the debris from the cabinets. Harry saw George wrap his own hand carefully in a cloth moments later and sneak the box into his already doxy-filled pocket. They found an unpleasant-looking silver instrument, something like a many-legged pair of tweezers, which scuttled up Harry's arm like a spider when he picked it up and attempted to puncture his skin. Sirius seized it and smashed it with a heavy book entitled Nature's Nobility, A Wizarding Genealogy. There was a musical box that emitted a faintly sinister tinkling tune when wound, and they all found themselves becoming curiously weak and sleepy, until Ginny had the sense to slam the lid shut. A heavy locket that none of them could open, a number of ancient seals, and, in a dusty box, an Order of Merlin first class that had been awarded to Sirius's grandfather for services to the ministry. "It means he gave them a load of gold," said Sirius contemptuously, throwing the medal into the rubbish sack. Several times, Creature sidled into the room and attempted to smuggle things away under his loincloth, muttering horrible curses every time they caught him at it. When Sirius wrested a large golden ring bearing the black crest from his grip, Creature actually burst into furious tears and left the room sobbing under his breath and calling Sirius names Harry had never heard before. "It was my father's," said Sirius, throwing the ring into the sack. "Creature wasn't quite as devoted to him as to my mother, but I still caught him snogging a pair of my father's old trousers last week." Mrs. Weasley kept them all working very hard over the next few days. The drawing-room took 3 days to decontaminate. Finally, the only undesirable things left in it were the tapestry of the Black Family Tree, which resisted all their attempts to remove it from the wall, and the rattling writing-desk. Moody had not dropped by headquarters yet, so they could not be sure what was inside it. They moved from the drawing-room to a dining-room on the ground floor, where they found spiders as large as saucers lurking in the dresser. Ron left the room hurriedly to make a cup of tea, and did not return for an hour and a half. The china, which bore the black crest and motto, was all thrown unceremoniously into a sack by Sirius, and the same fate met a set of old photographs in tarnished silver frames, all of whose occupants squealed shrilly as the glass covering them smashed. Snape might refer to their work as cleaning, but in Harry's opinion they were really waging war on the house, which was putting up a very good fight, aided and abetted by Creature. The house-elf kept appearing wherever they were congregated, his muttering becoming more and more offensive as he attempted to remove anything he could from the rubbish-sacks. Sirius went as far as to threaten him with clothes, but Creature fixed him with a watery stare and said, "Master must do as Master wishes," before turning away and muttering very loudly, "But Master will not turn Creature away, no, because Creature knows what they are up to. Oh, yes, he is plotting against the Dark Lord, yes, with these mudbloods and traitors and scum!" At which Sirius, ignoring Hermione's protests, seized Creature by the back of his loincloth and threw him bodily from the room. The doorbell rang several times a day, which was the cue for Sirius's mother to start shrieking again, and for Harry and the others to attempt to eavesdrop on the visitor, though they gleaned very little from the brief glimpses and snatches of conversation they were able to sneak before Mrs. Weasley recalled them to their tasks. Snape flitted in and out of the house several times more, though to Harry's relief they never came face to face. Harry also caught sight of his transfiguration teacher, Professor McGonagall, looking very odd in a muggle dress and coat, and she also seemed too busy to linger. Sometimes, however, the visitors stayed to help. Tonks joined them for a memorable afternoon in which they found a murderous old ghoul lurking in an upstairs toilet, and Lupin, who was staying in the house with Sirius, but who left it for long periods to do mysterious work for the Order, helped them repair a grandfather clock that had developed the unpleasant habit of shooting heavy bolts at passers-by. Mundungus redeemed himself slightly in Mrs. Weasley's eyes by rescuing Ron from an ancient set of purple robes that had tried to strangle him when he removed them from their wardrobe. Despite the fact that he was still sleeping badly, still having dreams about corridors and locked doors that made his scar prickle, Harry was managing to have fun for the first time all summer. As long as he was busy, he was happy. When the action abated, however, whenever he dropped his guard or lay exhausted in bed watching blurred shadows move across the ceiling, the thought of the looming ministry hearing returned to him. Fear jabbed at his insides like needles as he wondered what was going to happen to him if he was expelled. The idea was so terrible that he did not dare voice it aloud, not even to Ron and Hermione, who, though he often saw them whispering together and casting anxious looks in his direction, followed his lead in not mentioning it. Sometimes he could not prevent his imagination showing him a faceless ministry official who was snapping his wand in two and ordering him back to the Dursleys. But he would not go. He was determined on that. He would come back here to Grimold Place and live with Sirius. He felt as though a brick had dropped into his stomach when Mrs. Weasley turned to him during dinner on Wednesday evening and said quietly, "I've ironed your best clothes for tomorrow morning, Harry, and I want you to wash your hair tonight, too. A good first impression can work wonders." Ron, Hermione, Fred, George and Ginny all stopped talking and looked over at him. Harry nodded and tried to keep eating his chop, but his mouth had become so dry he could not chew. "How am I getting there?" he asked Mrs. Weasley, trying to sound unconcerned. "Arthur's taking you to work with him," said Mrs. Weasley, gently. Mr. Weasley smiled encouragingly at Harry across the table. "You can wait in my office until it's time for the hearing," he said. Harry looked over at Sirius, but before he could ask the question, Mrs. Weasley had answered it. "Professor Dumbledore doesn't think it's a good idea for Sirius to go with you, and I must say I..."
"Think he's quite right," said Sirius through clenched teeth. Mrs. Weasley pursed her lips.
"When did Dumbledore tell you that?" Harry said, staring at Sirius. "He came last night, when you were in bed," said Mr. Weasley.
Sirius stabbed moodily at a potato with his fork. Harry lowered his own eyes to his plate. The thought that Dumbledore had been in the house on the eve of his hearing and not asked to see him made him feel, if it were possible, even worse.